The hope of the World Wide Web was to bring us closer together, but in many ways, it's instead driving us apart into increasingly small and angry splinter groups. Now, while many have blamed online echo chambers, there is some research to show that echo chambers may not be causing these splinter groups. A lot of studies have been looking at this recently, and one of these studies, titled Turn and Face the Strange, Investigating the Filter Bubble Bursting Information Interactions, was done by Dana McKay, Associate Dean in Interaction, Technology and Information at RMIT University in 2022. Dana, along with George Buchanan, Deputy Dean in the School of Computing Technologies at RMIT University, joins us now to talk about what they've discovered and what's going on exactly in the World Wide Web. Dana, George, thanks so much for being on air. How are you two today?
Great, thank you.
Great. Going well, thank you.
Excellent. All right. So, Dana, I think I'd like to start with this question with you. Your study, Turn and Face the Strange, what exactly did the study entail and what were you looking at exactly?
So it was actually two separate studies. The first study was an interview study with 18 people who had changed their mind about something important to them. So for some of them, it was going vegan. For some of them, it was choosing what university to go to. For some of them, it was political decisions. And the second study was a result of that first study, because one of the things we noticed in the interviews was people were saying, oh yeah, I deliberately go out and look at the other side. And like, that's kind of counter to every popular narrative. Well, people looking at the other side deliberately, that doesn't happen on the internet. We all just spread apart into tiny little groups. So then we did a study where for 2 weeks, we had 20 people record what happened every time they, or not every time, but when they saw things that they disagreed with on the internet. How did they see them? What did they do? How did they react? And essentially, you know, we were worried that the first group were people who were willing to talk about a view change and maybe they were a bit weird, but no, even with these other people who we just said, right, let's see what happens when people see stuff. Everyone saw something they disagreed with. Most people kind of read a little bit more, investigated a little bit more. It was during, it was actually during lockdown. So, I mean, the timing worked really well because everyone was spending all their life on the internet and everyone was mad about everything. So, you know, there was plenty to disagree with on the internet. Not that I would go back to it for the sake of study, but, no. You know, so we saw that people were not just clicking away and going, oh, no, I'm going to go over here and hang out with people who are like me. They were actively engaging with points they disagreed with, whether to argue against them or to think more deeply about them.
Hmm. It's very interesting you say that as well, because before I hopped on the show, that's what I do on my social media feed. I'm not actually looking at my echo chambers. I'm looking at stuff that I find disagreeable and I'm baffled with. And so I'm stuck in there for, you know, a good 5 minutes being like, who are these people? Why do they think like this? And that's exactly what I'm sort of doing. So reading over one of the your conversation article about some of these studies, I saw the term pop up, effective polarization. George, would you be able to take us through what that term means?
Well, I think, well, there are two parts to it, obviously. One is the effective, one is the polarization part. The polarization part, I think everybody intuitively gets, splitting people apart in polar opposites, trying to drive them across apart, rather. But the effective part is about emotions. One of the things that really happens with a lot of misinformation, etc., is people are leaning into and making a debate more emotive, more emotional, and getting people to respond essentially instinctively rather than really thinking about what's going on, bypassing, if you will, quite a lot of the ways in which we normally double check things, right? But if we wind up, we don't do that. And effective polarization sometimes happens completely by accident. We see something, we have emotional reaction, we get driven to a more extreme version of ourselves, if you will, but sometimes it's being manipulated quite deliberately to get those emotions to push people towards positions that they may not otherwise get to themselves.
Another important part of it is that we then, instead of thinking about the other viewpoint, we start to think about the other people as being less than or horrible or stupid, or so essentially it goes from just disagreement to actual hatred.
Yeah, that seems like a bit of a slippery slope. So this polarizing content that we got on social media, why exactly are we being fed polarizing content? Is this a deliberate strategy, or is this a bit of a sort of an unconscious human psychology at work in a digital space? Is it being deliberately pushed by, I don't know, someone on high, or yeah, is it just sort of the way human brains are connecting on a digital platform?
Essentially, the answer is neither of those. What in fact happens is that the way social media works is based on attention, particularly clicks. So when you click on a story, or if you like it, or you respond, then that counts as attention. And social media company wants as much attention as possible, because every eyeball they can put an advert to. And what has happened, sort of unintentionally, sort of a bit not, is that people manipulate that economy, if you will, the way that social media works, the way the algorithms work, because a very strong opinion, going back to Dana's point about that feeling of hatred and visceral anger, really drives attention very strongly, much more than, that's a nice thought. So to some extent, hatred is really profitable for social media companies. It gets more eyeballs, it gets more clicks, it sells more adverts. But at the same time, while some of that is accidental, groups that actually value and benefit from polarization deliberately exploit those very algorithms to drive more attention going to their viewpoint being posted online. So you don't want to write a considered piece, you want to write clickbait, as people use it, because that will literally get people clicking on social media companies doing very nicely out of it. Thank you very much. But all that polarization, of course, in society is also increasing.
Yeah, this sounds like a very tricky, very difficult problem. Is there a particular psychological reason that we're driven towards content that makes us purposefully upset rather than stuff that would make us purposefully happy or a bit more excited? Is it just a more powerful guttural emotion, or is it something along the lines of how the social media algorithm works? That's what we're going to get pulled towards.
So we don't buy stuff when we're happy. And the social media, so there was a Washington Post article about 10 years ago now, that found that Facebook was deliberately feeding people things that made them angry or upset, because then they were more likely to buy stuff. And
wow,
we have been told since then that they're not trying to deliberately upset us anymore. But of course, with the polarization that's happened, just statistically, we're more likely to see things that upset us, because societies are more polarized, and have polarization generally has been increasing. And the algorithms don't really care what emotion you're feeling. So essentially, what comes up on your feed is determined by a machine learning algorithm that looks at the type of content you engage with, whether it's on TikTok and you actually watch through a whole video, or whether it's on Facebook and you click like, or you pause at a news article, or, you know, whichever of those things it is. The machine learning algorithms don't care why the underlying reason for you staying, they just care that you do. And this might be why I think a lot of people have TikTok feeds that do actually make them happy, right? Because, you know, you're going to watch a video that makes you happy. Whereas if you're scrolling through Facebook, it's that kind of that moment of your brain going, wait, what now? That will cause you to stop and maybe react.
Yes. That's my lived experience. Well, George, Dana, this is very interesting research. We're almost out of time for the interview, but I guess the last question I'd like to ask for you both is there a way to improve the sort of internet social spaces as it is right now? Or will this require some type of outside government intervention? And how would that even look like to, you know, sort of regulate polarizing content and communities? How is that even possible right now?
Well, I think there are two parts to that answer. One of which is that very, like, famously Elon Musk, who obviously owns X, is very much an advocate against limitations on speech, mainly because, of course, that would reduce his revenue. But actually, governments are very likely, I think, to legislate. In the UK, Germany, here in Australia, governments are seeing their spends on mental health support, for instance, for a bunch of minoritized groups, explode, like not just increase 5 or 10%, but 100 to 300%. Governments are very unlikely to put up with their budgets being blown out by private companies, essentially polluting the social environment. And it has impacts on things like health through, say, vaccine denial, for instance. So I think it's not so much a case of if, but when governments will intervene. But the difficulty is going to be that, as has been used this morning, the US government, the House of Representatives, is demanding that the e-safety commissioner appear before them because Australian laws are impacting US freedom of speech, which is a complete misrepresentation of the law, by the way, because, of course, Australian law only affects Australia. But that sort of tension will remain because companies will try to avoid the legislation of governments, as we've seen with social media and other contexts. Dana might have a couple of other points.
I think there are things we can do as well, which is, if you see something you disagree with, approach it with curiosity rather than anger. And rather than clicking an angry emotion, walk away, because then you're not feeding the algorithm.
I like that. Yeah, angry emotion, don't click on it. Just walk away. Scroll on by, maybe. Very nice. Well, Dana, George, thank you so much for dropping by the show this morning. It's been great chatting with you. That's all the time we have. But thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your studies. It's been great chatting with you this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
No worries. That was Dana McKay, Associate Dean in Interaction Technology and Information at RMIT University, and George Buchanan, Deputy Dean in the School of Computing Technologies, also from RMIT University, talking about why the World Wide Web is dividing us and hopefully how to improve it as well.